Before we begin, we'd like to share a trailer for our friend Eric's podcast, True Consequences. Eric's out there fighting the good fight, telling stories of unsolved cases with a concentration on his state and our neighbors to the northwest, New Mexico. You can find True Consequences wherever you listen to podcasts. Here's the trailer.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Carter Landin, the host and producer of True Consequences podcast. True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I started this show to bring light to cases that need to be solved in my state. You see, my brother was murdered 33 years ago, and his murderer still walks free. So I cover cases with an empathetic lens, because I understand what it's like to seek justice for a family member. I hope you'll give True Consequences a chance. You can find me wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
About 30 miles northeast of San Antonio, in central Guadalupe County, is Seguin, Texas. One of the state's oldest towns, it was named for Colonel Juan N. Seguin, who fought against Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna alongside American and European settlers in the war for Texas's independence from Mexico. Not long after the settlement's 1838 establishment, a slew of German immigrants began moving into the area, a migratory trend that lasted decades. Seguin's picturesque pasture lands and rich soil provided the promise of the American dream for European settlers in the form of owning lush cotton plantations and grazing cattle on sprawling plains. Since few cotton plantations could be found west of Seguin, in fact, the area became known as the place the Old South ended. For many decades, agriculture and ranching were the town's economic drivers, and Seguin flourished and prospered. In 1912, Texas Lutheran College was opened and quickly became known as a prestigious institution, regarded as a school whose students excelled not only academically, but also athletically. Eventually, the institution became known as Texas Lutheran University. In the 1920s, a new economic craze was sweeping the Lone Star State, black gold. Like countless other Texas towns and cities during this oil boom, Seguin experienced a dramatic bump economically when oil was struck 15 miles east of town. Almost overnight, infrastructurally speaking anyway, Seguin was transformed into a modern city, complete with city sewers, sidewalks, a park, a new courthouse and jailhouse, and even a fancy, highly stylized, Art Deco-style city hall. The rest is history. The city of Seguin prospered through the 20th century, adding a ton of manufacturing plants and service and entertainment industry establishments to an economy already solidified by farming, ranching, and oil. Seguin might be best known as the home of the Magnolia Hotel, a structure that began as a two-room log cabin back when Texas was still a republic. After chemist John Park moved to the city in 1846, however, the building began its first transformation as he experimented with the mass production of limecrete, now known as concrete, of which the man collected the necessary materials from the gravel beds and sandbars along the Guadalupe River. It isn't John Park's ingenuity that made the Magnolia Hotel so memorable. Rather, it's the claims that the structure is haunted by the ghosts of those killed within its walls. From Texas Ranger James Campbell, ambushed and murdered by Comanches in 1840 when it was only a small two-room cabin, to a traveling salesman who is said to have slit his own throat ear to ear in one of the rooms after it became a full-fledged hotel. But it's unnecessary to believe in ghosts or spirits to believe in hauntings. When the brutality of a crime against a person defies what we consider decent or even human, and becomes surrounded by uncertainty and mystery as the perpetrator eludes justice and the case grows cold, an entire community or town or city can become haunted by the act. In Seguin, Texas, the 2002 slang of Japanese foreign exchange student Mikiko Kasahara did just that. Little is known about Mikiko Kasahara before she stepped foot in Texas, off a plane from her home in Japan. She was born to Sachiko and Toshiki Kasahara in Osaka, Japan, on June 18, 1981. Mikiko has been described in a few reports as the only daughter of the couple, and as the oldest of two daughters born to the couple in other reports. We are unable to definitively determine which account is correct. Mikiko came to Texas to study at Texas Lutheran University in Seguin in May of 2000 when she was 19 years old, after enrolling in the school's foreign exchange program as an English as a second language student. The university is small, and at the time around 1,300 undergrad students were enrolled there. Still, Texas Lutheran has remained a prestigious academic institution almost since its inception in 1912, often ranking in the top five of the best colleges in the western United States. Seguin could be described as a quaint college town. The city's population in the year 2000 was about 22,000, but its close proximity to two big Texas cities makes Texas Lutheran University desirable. To Seguin's southwest is San Antonio, about 45 minutes away by car, and about an hour drive to its north is Austin. However, since Mikiko Kasahara spoke a limited amount of English when she arrived in Seguin and was quite shy as a result of that, and the fact that the environment was so foreign to her, partying in either big city was likely not foremost on her mind. Besides, the young woman was not interested in drinking or using drugs. But Mikiko was incredibly bright, and according to the Director of International Students at Texas Lutheran, Sharla Bailey, she gained greater English-speaking skills fast. Also quickly, the co-ed became familiar with campus and the city of Seguin itself, that adaptability another testament to her intelligence. Even during that short-lived time of keeping to herself and learning the ropes of a new place, Mikiko was described as being quite happy, but upon mastering her surroundings and strengthening her communication abilities, the young woman began thriving and expressing herself, according to Sharla Bailey, very positively. Mikiko studied hard and presumably in an effort to stay focused on her studies, moved off campus and into a unit at the Sunset Terrace Apartments on the 900 block of San Antonio Avenue. The location was great. It was just far enough away from campus for some peace and quiet, but close enough that it was a relatively short walk. All Mikiko's hard work paid off in December of 2001 when she graduated from the English as a Second Language program, which does not earn college credits. The following month, in January of 2002, she began classes as a full-time freshman. Her major was undeclared. By spring, the middle of her first semester, as the campus crepe myrtles bloomed, Mikiko Kasahara's name was among other excelling Texas Lutheran students on the provost's list. By her second official semester, Mikiko's grade point average was nearly 4.0, and she made the dean's list. She had made many friends at this point, and was always surrounded by them. It was a natural progression, though Mikiko was about as friendly a person as they come. She was also extremely strong-willed and motivated. She didn't cave to peer pressure, but did put her utmost trust in her friends. English studies professor Janice Turk taught Mikiko in her creative writing course and later recalled a paper the young woman wrote when she assigned the class a travel-themed writing assignment. Mikiko wrote a story about taking a road trip to San Antonio with friends to catch a Spurs game. That's basketball for those of y'all not familiar. On the trip, Mikiko described them stopping somewhere in between, somewhere without the annoyance of a city's light pollution, just to look at the stars. Professor Turk remembered Mikiko as incredible, a great student who liked to laugh.
"To have something like that happen to her,"
Professor Turk went on,
"is so sad."
After finishing her final exams at Texas Lutheran University in Seguin, 21-year-old Mikiko Kasahara was feeling good, confident, expecting to have aced the tests. Her entire freshman year had gone well, and Mikiko was eager to celebrate along a small group of her closest friends. So, before her fellow foreign language students took off for the holiday break, she did just that. On the evening of Friday, December 13th, 2002, Mikiko was bubbly and excited as her best friends showed up at her apartment for the get-together. A Seguin police detective later commented that the gathering of friends was totally normal and nothing sinister at all loomed over the celebration, which lasted into the wee hours of the following day. At 6 a.m. that morning, many Chinese and Japanese Texas Lutheran students left Seguin, headed to the airport to fly back home for visits with family. Around 6 a.m. was also the last time Mikiko Kasahara was seen alive, when her celebration was ending. At 9:20 a.m. on Saturday, December 14th, 2002, a resident of the Sunset Terrace Apartments frantically called the Seguin Fire Department. "There was a fire at a nearby unit," the caller told dispatch. Firefighters arrived at the complex post-haste and began extinguishing the incredibly destructive blaze, which completely destroyed the apartment home of Mikiko and an adjacent unit. Because firewalls had been installed at the Sunset Terrace, the fire's flames and incredible heat was particularly concentrated in Mikiko's bedroom. When firefighters were finally able to extinguish the fire there, they were shocked at the grisly sight before them, a body so badly burned that only a charred skeleton remained. Immediate identification of the deceased was impossible. All distinguishing characteristics were gone. But after the body was removed and transported to the Travis County Medical Examiner's Office, the deputy ME said that preliminary indications pointed to the body being that of an Asian female. While they awaited a positive identification of the burned body, authorities in Seguin commented that they doubted it could be anyone but Mikiko Kasahara. The co-ed's parents embarked on a plane trip to Texas from Japan immediately upon receiving word of the fire. A police spokesman suggested that if they were unable to identify the body as Mikiko's using her dental records, it would have to be done with DNA. It is unclear which method was ultimately responsible for identifying the charred skeletal remains as those of 21-year-old Mikiko Kasahara. At the Travis County Medical Examiner's Office, Deputy Medical Examiner Dr. Elizabeth Peacock discovered no traces of drugs or alcohol in Mikiko's system. The young woman's larynx was broken at its joint, indicating that she had most likely been strangled to death before her apartment was set on fire. But it was hardly the only injury Mikiko suffered. Within her pelvis was what Dr. Peacock called a profound injury, one that produced, she said in her report, much hemorrhage. Reports years later would suggest that there were further injuries, though they were not mentioned at the time and never expounded upon. After performing the procedure, Deputy Medical Examiner Peacock ruled that Mikiko Kasahara died as the result of, quote, homicidal violence including, but not limited to, strangulation. Between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. on Saturday, December 14, 2002, the ME determined Mikiko was sexually tortured, choked until she died, and then set on fire. Mikiko's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Kasahara, were, of course, devastated by the loss of their daughter to such senseless and extreme violence. Meeting and speaking with them shortly after they arrived on campus, Director of International Students at Texas Lutheran, Sharla Bailey, described the Kasahara's grief as one of the most difficult things she'd ever experienced in her lifetime. Their sadness and confusion concerning their daughter's murder was abundantly apparent. But both Texas Lutheran faculty and Seguin police said that they expressed their grief with grace, warmth, and peacefulness. Sharla Bailey recalled collecting photographs of Mikiko from friends, fellow students, faculty, and staff that showed the young woman at her happiest. The photos were gathered to make a large collage to give to the grieving Kasaharas. Professor of English Studies Janice Turk, who taught Mikiko, presented the Kasaharas with their daughter's class papers as they were escorted through the school to visit the classrooms Mikiko had spent the last couple years studying. The investigation into the murder of Mikiko Kasahara, meanwhile, wasn't uncovering the information the Seguin police needed to make an arrest. In fact, just finding simple leads to follow was proving a frustrating and fruitless endeavor, even with the assistance of investigators from the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Seguin police investigator Lieutenant Mike Rosas assured the press that they did not have a serial killer on their hands when asked by a reporter if Texas Lutheran students should be extra cautious or worried about their safety. Lieutenant Rosas' reassurances, however, meant little. It seemed almost impossible for students to relax and stop looking over their shoulders, especially considering that the department seemed to be making little headway in the investigation. Mikiko's killer, who'd carried out the slaying with such brutality and senselessness, was still out there. But that was not for the department's lack of effort. Besides the motive's elusiveness, though, was the fact that Mikiko's killer sent whatever physical evidence that might have been on the scene up in flames. Still, the Seguin police combed the Sunset Terrace apartments, looking for anyone who might have witnessed something out of the ordinary, and also looking for anyone who seemed to have something to hide. Many folks who lived there, if not all, were asked to undergo polygraph examinations. Now, being asked to take a lie detector test can make plenty of people, including innocent people, very nervous. Some residents at Sunset Terrace simply were not interested in doing it, which is completely understandable. One resident who wished to remain anonymous told a reporter that he was offended by the police request to do so, which is, perhaps, a little dramatic, but again, understandable. Many of the slain young woman's neighbors, however, felt differently, and were more than willing to help the investigation by submitting to a polygraph examination. Besides the polygraphs, police were interested in good old-fashioned interviews with Sunset Terrace denizens. If anything was gleaned from that line of investigation, it was kept close to the investigators' chests. It is known that detectives were able to confirm with neighbors that Mikiko almost exclusively associated with fellow foreign exchange students, most of them from Japan and China. Neighbors recalled that every single one of them was friendly, personable, and kept a low profile, meaning that other than hearing the music at Mikiko's place up a little high every once in a while, there was nothing at all to report about her get-togethers. They weren't the rowdy and inebriated bunch you might expect to encounter during a college party. The cops, of course, spoke with all of Mikiko's friends and acquaintances, and they had a particular interest in the handful of foreign language students who'd attended her apartment party the night before she was murdered and set ablaze. Most of them found out about the violent death of their close friend just after arriving at their homes for the holiday break. Fortunately, they were with family who could comfort them. When they came back to Seguin, police spoke with all of them and gained absolutely no new insight into the slang of Mikiko Kasahara. Although most of the physical evidence had gone up in flames, one item police found at the scene allowed them to develop a theory, and fire investigators, too, were hard at work. It will likely come as no surprise that Fire Marshal Daryl Brinketer from the neighboring city of New Braunfels determined that the blaze at Mikiko Kasahara's Sunset Terrace apartment was set intentionally to cover up her murder. The fire was started in the north side of the young woman's home, in her bedroom, where her body was discovered. Police dogs were brought in to sniff for accelerants used by the perpetrator of this evil act, and the dogs hit on plenty of spots. Fire Marshal Brinketer said that the canines could have simply hit on chemicals in the carpet or things like wood stain. Though fire investigators took samples and examined the materials the dogs sniffed out, it's unclear if it was ever definitively determined what accelerants were used, if any. Meanwhile, the Seguin police began inspecting the items they collected from the scene, in particular a laptop computer that had been charred and contorted by the high-intensity blaze. Around the time Mikiko was murdered, someone had accessed from her laptop what the cops called a trove of Asian-themed pornography. They called it, quote, Asian female pornography, and I have no idea what that means exactly, but perhaps the term was purposefully obfuscating. Now, the nature of this discovery is huge. It suggested to police that whoever killed and sexually tortured Mikiko likely held a fetishization of Asian women, an obsession, they said, which provided them with a possible motive. The fetishization of women by race is, of course, incredibly problematic and simultaneously complicated for a number of reasons, but it's one of those reasons that is particularly relevant here. The March 2021 Atlanta, Georgia spa shootings, in which 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long shot and killed 8 people, including 6 Asian women, like Mikiko slang, highlights this particular depravity. Long cited his conflict with God and his sex addiction as his motives for the killings, but here's the thing. He specifically targeted spas owned and operated by employees of Asian descent, which strongly suggests that there was more to the killer's motivation than simply a religion and sex conflict. United States House of Representatives Congressperson Marilyn Strickland said that, in Long's case, making excuses and rebranding it as sexual addiction undermines the heart of this issue, and that crimes such as these should be called out for what they are. But in Mikiko Kasahara's murder case, this theory is only relevant, perhaps, if her killer was not Asian, which we have no idea. Unfortunately, no physical evidence could be lifted from the laptop's surface because of its burnt condition. No fingerprints, no touch DNA. For years after the December 14, 2002 slaying, Seguin Police Detective Maureen Watson spent the 14th of every month outside Mikiko's apartment, both in an attempt to connect with the young woman and in hopes that she would observe someone watching her in a suspicious way. But other than arriving to a small memorial set there in 2005, Detective Watson never saw anything unusual. For years as a Seguin detective, Mikiko's unsolved murder haunted Maureen Watson, who kept a photograph of the slain Texas Lutheran student on her bedside table. She kept the thick binder of documents and evidence in the case close at hand on her desk. The detective recalled Mikiko's mother squeezing her hand tightly and telling her to let it go. The Kasaharas, she said, did not let animosity and uncertainty destroy for them the memory of their beloved daughter, and all they truly wanted was an explanation and a heartfelt, remorseful apology. But the case continued to haunt Detective Watson, promising sleepless nights every year as the anniversary approached. Also in 2005, the year Mikiko's peers graduated without her. Seguin's then-chief of police, Luis Collazo, told reporters that he believed the killer to be a man, which was not really news, and that since the initial investigation began, the department had developed several persons of interest. Some of those persons of interest, Chief Collazo said, had been eliminated, and some remained suspects. No one, however, has ever been publicly named as such. What is known is that one individual has been interviewed multiple times, though it is not clear if this person was a suspect or a witness. When the still distraught and grieving parents returned to the Texas Lutheran campus for the second time, the brick memorializing their daughter Mikiko was mortared into the campus's alumni plaza. Flowers are often left by those who still grieve the loss of their friend, and out of respect and sadness even from those who did not know her. In the years following the violent murder of Mikiko Kasahara, detectives attempted to keep both the case from growing cold and to keep it in the public's eye. By 2009, Maureen Watson was a captain on the Seguin police force and was still haunted by the 2002 slaying. When Mikiko was killed, Watson had been on the department's criminal investigation division for less than a year. The case wasn't cold, she said, and detectives still picked up the file regularly in hopes to catch something they had not before. Captain Watson often wondered if she missed something because of her lack of experience during the initial investigation. Mikiko was a pure victim, the captain said. Her friends, or her, were not criminally involved, and the young woman's lifestyle was about as low risk as it gets. She didn't even drink. By 2020, a multitude of detectives had reviewed and reinvestigated the murder of Mikiko Kasahara, and every one of them are said to have taken the case personally and worked it passionately. Captain Maureen Watson retired in 2014, and likely the murder still haunts her, as it likely does the Texas Lutheran University and the entirety of the city of Seguin. Detective Jamie Diaz picked up the case sometime in the 2010s after Captain Watson wished to give the investigation a fresh set of eyes. Every year, Diaz said, in 2020, Mikiko's mother, Dr. Sachiko Kasahara, flies in from Japan and sits in on police conferences concerning her daughter's case. Detective Diaz sees the good luck charm Mrs. Kasahara gave to him every day at his home. A reminder, he says, to re-review the case. He says he can't let the case go, and that it's almost as if Mikiko is a member of his own family. The case of the murder of Mikiko Kasahara is currently being investigated by the Texas Rangers in conjunction with the Seguin Police. If you have any information about Mikiko's slaying, please contact the Rangers at 800-346-3243 or by messaging them through their cold case website, dps.texas.gov/cold case. We'll provide that link in this episode's show notes. If you'd like to help find answers for the families of unsolved crime victims from all over, or help identify a Jane or John Doe, please visit DNASolves.com, where you can submit your DNA data from a consumer testing company, like Ancestry or 23andMe, to their database. If you have not tested with one such company, you can get a kit directly from them by going to connect.dnasolves.com. Your DNA data there is used only for law enforcement investigations. At DNASolves.com, too, you can donate to one of the crowdfunding cases to help identify an unknown decedent or help solve a cold case. We'll provide links in the show notes. You can find Gone Cold on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using @GoneColdPodcast. We're also now on YouTube, where we hope to bring y'all the podcast in a kind of a different way, coming fairly soon. So go to youtube.com/C/GoneColdPodcast and subscribe. We'd greatly appreciate it if you did. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50 a month, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, such as the Riverside Village Massacre, Parts 1 and 2, and our episode Doped Up and Ready to Kill, among others. Thanks so much to everyone who supports us there. We could not do this without you, and we appreciate it beyond words. If you like what we're doing here, you can also support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating and short review on iTunes. Reviews on iTunes help make Gone Cold visible to more people, and the more folks who listen to these stories, the greater the likelihood someone will come forward with information. If you have not already, we would immensely appreciate your 5-star rating and review there. The Austin American-Statesman, the Houston Chronicle, the Sikkim Gazette, the Texas State Historical Association, and HauntedMagnoliaHotel.com were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.